Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's our first show of 2014. It's January 7th, and I got my wingman, Jimmy Ludwig from the Happy Hour Guys.
Hey, Jimmy, great to be here. Thanks,
Kelly,
man.
Taylor from Kelso Porn Beer, and Ben Wiley from all these great bars in Brooklyn.
Happy New Year.
What's the new bar, Ben?
The new one is called Glorietta Baldi. And it's at 502 Franklin Ave in Bed-Stuy.
Good Brooklyn.
God, right. What am I drinking? This is Kelly just handed me something, and it's unbelievable. Kelly, what in God's name are you pouring?
That's our industrial IPA.
And it's industrial strength?
It's 10% alcohol, double IPA.
Wow. Oh, it's clean.
Cleaning my teeth, too.
Resiny.
Like that.
Ooh.
Well, hey, this is Beer Sessions Radio. We're off to a good start, 2014. Our last show, we had a great show with Jamie and Irene from Full Sail Brewing in Oregon, and we had Mr. Cantwell from Elysian, and that was pretty cool. It wrapped up the year. We had Christmas, New Year's. Any good beers you drank over the holidays, Jimmy?
Oh, God, I drank a ton of good beers. Matter of fact, we're gonna actually have a little phone call here in a bit to a place where I was drinking. I went all the way to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where I'm from, to a brewery called Black Rocks Brewing, and these guys are making some crazy good beers up there, and I brought some with us today, and we're going to maybe call them in a bit and say hello. But you think it's cold in New York. It's like four times colder there. Literally, it's like colder than the surface.
But
of the
four
moon.
Times zero is still
zero.
Zero.
I was never good at math. Just at beer.
Well, what about freezing? I read a story about that if you're in like the Packers or one of those Midwestern cold places, you're drinking beer. If you're outside, if it's a certain temperature, the beer could actually turn to slush in your hands.
Well, you know what we do,
is that true?
Jimmy? We go outside when the weather's like this, and we take a pan of water that's room temperature, and you throw it up in the air, and by the time it hits the ground, it's frozen solid.
Fun and games in Michigan.
That's
in
Michigan.
And that's what we call a party.
So you can tell. We've been off the air for a couple of weeks. We're loosening up. And Ben, you might as well tell us. So what happened at your bar? You had like all these catastrophes.
Yeah, this morning was a bit of chaos. Mission Dolores, that's our bar over at 249 4th Avenue, Park Slope, Gowanus area. We just had our security gates all frozen, couldn't get those up.
Oh, good God.
Then we had an electrical outage over at Bar Great Harry, our first one, our baby. And so there's just a lot of bouncing back and forth. And then I had to go over to Glorietta, of course, because it's still a young bar, so I'm there every day. So by the time I did all that and then tried to get back home to get back to Bushwick, I was like, oh, I don't know if it's going to work.
You have got like, four of my favorite bars. You got Bar Great Harry, Mission Dolores.
Mm-hmm. Then came the Owl Farm.
The Owl Farm.
Yep. And now Glorietta Baldi.
Okay. Amazing bars.
So to Thank keep you. Us on point, how yeah. do you pick your beers? Because now you got 12 taps at Glorietta Baldi,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, at a certain point, we had to do a little kind of division of labor. So the bars are kind of run by different – we have different people kind of curating lists. Right now, my brother Mike is doing Bar Great Harry primarily. Crimson, the wonderful Crimson over at Mission Dolores, who I know has a place in your heart, Jimmy.
She's a great bartender.
Yeah, she's fantastic, and she's doing a lot of the curating over there. Then we have Steven at Owl Farm, who I was on with last time when you let us come here. And at Glorietta Baldi, it's yours truly, me.
That's great. So what are some of the beers that you have on draft right now?
Over at Glorietta right now, we have Bronx Black Pale Ale, which is fun. I like supporting as much local stuff as I can.
Drink local, everyone.
Yeah. And I like seeing more and more kind of black, light-bodied beers, I feel like 5, 6, 7 years ago, black beers were all stouts. So now you have a lot of black IPAs and stuff, so that's fun. Rogue Shakespeare Oatmeal Stout just went up, which is always a good winter beer.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah. And what else do we have up there? Oh, we got a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I'm told that drinking dark beer can actually prolong your life. Is that true, Jimmy? Do you know anything about that?
Look at me. I'm 48 years old.
You can definitely get pickled.
I think that's the pickling part, but yeah, let's make a toast, Kelly. These are great beers. This is the industrial.
Cheers.
I love it.
Cheers. Cheers. Happy New Year.
Cheers. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me. We've got a lot of special guests coming on tonight. Give a big shout out once again. GreatBrewers.com is our sponsor on Heritage Radio Network. And go to heritageradionetwork.com. You can be a member. You get a lot of benefits, including invitations to special parties and things. And tomorrow night we're doing industry night at Jimmy's number 43. And we're going to talk to Kelly about how he got started as a brewer, because in the old days he worked in the Pacific Northwest with ancient equipment. Mm-hmm. And yeah. and we're going to go on from that and talk a little about New York City Beer Week, which Kelly is a big part of. So Kelly, let's dive into this. So we've known you for a while.
Right.
We know you in New York, Kelso, Heartland Brewing. You're one of the, I would say, are you the top brewer in New York in terms of?
Oh, definitely.
You're making
great question.
I didn't say it, but you know, if you're gonna bring it up,
I believe that's what we call in the industry a softball.
Exactly. Yeah. So I've been brewing here for a while. I've been brewing in New York City since 2000. But you know, I got my start in brewing in San Diego, not in the Pacific Northwest. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. Went to college in San Diego. Got a job down there brewing. Back when there was one brewery.
In San Diego. Jeez.
Yeah, Carl Strauss Breweries, downtown Colombian B. And then that's kind of exploded down there.
A little bit. That's kind of a epicenter of beer in this country, right?
But, you know, and I was basically brewing for free beer. I didn't really want to make money at it. I just wanted to offset my majority cost besides tuition was beer. So I started brewing as a financial thing to get free beer, and then I realized I could actually make money doing it and continue to do it, move back home and all that stuff.
So what kind of systems did you work on back then? Tell us, just give us, you know, that was what, 20 years ago?
Yeah, something like that. It was 24 years ago at this point. But, you know, there were the most interesting systems were when I moved back home and up north of Seattle. And there was this guy that just had gotten elected mayor of my hometown, and he had a pizza place, and he just had a son. And he was putting a brewery in the basement of his pizza place, and it was a 5-barrel system that was handcrafted by an engineer from Boeing. And it wasn't really a brew system. It was just a bunch of stainless steel stuff kind of thrown together with a heater under it. And he said, hey, why don't you brew here? I can't brew because I'm now mayor and I have a new son. So I brewed there, and he couldn't pay me. Because he just spent all of his money campaigning, and he's a politician. I can't pay you today, but I'll pay you later. And I had pizza and beer all summer long, and a reference from the mayor on this gig. And then I got to know this Boeing engineer pretty well, and we building the system out and getting it working correctly. We had to use the mash tun was also the keg cleaner, so we'd mash in, clean everything out, get the boil going and clean out the mash tun and put chemical in there and recirculate and clean kegs over the mash tun. And it was about a 4-foot high ceiling in there, and I'm 6'2". So I got all these pictures of me. We were talking about Game of Thrones earlier.
Indeed,
I kind of look like a hobbit or something. That's a different, I know. I'm mixing up my medieval.
You're all over in the fantasy
I know, you
world
know, whatever.
Right now.
You get the idea, though. Yeah. You know, I was just kind of crouched around in a boiling system in the basement of this pizza place in Mukilteo, Washington. It's all very random.
Mukilteo, just outside of Seattle. Yeah,
just outside, just north of there.
I went to school up there.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Well, it's the home of Boeing up there.
That's right.
He was a Boeing engineer, as I
lots
said.
Of, so. Lots of gearheads around.
You've been everywhere, man.
I've been a couple places, baby.
Yeah.
A couple places.
Yeah.
Hey, so, Kelly, had you gone to school for brewing?
No, my degree was international business and Russian and Eastern European studies with a minor in Japanese.
Get out of here. Oh, I studied Japanese all through college, and I got my master's degree in Japan.
Oh, so. Excellent. Yeah.
Which
don't quiz me on Japanese. And I was better in Russian.
These guys are telling the truth.
Oh, it's actually Buddha
days. Right? You're telling the truth.
All of this qualifies you perfectly for the world of craft
beer.
Did
you really? You studied Japanese? Yeah.
Yeah, see? And then I lived over there for 5 years. I was a translator and interpreter.
No
kidding. Whereabouts?
All, of course, wasted now because I don't use it at all. I spent 2 years in Yokohama, which is just south of Tokyo, and then 3 years in the Northwest in a place called Fukui, which is like saying you're from Michigan.
Right. Uh-huh. Do you know that the Happy Hour guys actually shot an episode where we climbed Mount Fuji and drank a Japanese craft beer at the summit of Mount Fuji?
That is, I climbed Fuji. Well, I didn't know that. That's awesome. I climbed Fuji too, and I drank a can of hot coffee out of a vending machine at the top.
That's exactly what you do. Because
wow,
you're freezing.
I gotta get up there.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really
the old
cool.
The old saying is a wise man climbs Mount Fuji once, a fool and climbs it twice.
Yep.
I think that's true for any mountain.
Coming down much harder than going up.
Yeah. That's great. Anyway, so there
what,
you go.
When you worked at this place, what was the town called? The Musk or something?
Muckleteo. Come on, man.
Muckleteo.
Muckleteo. It sounds like it's from the Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah, you know, it's native tribe for good meeting place, meaning that's kind of where
that's where the pizza and beer is.
Come yeah, on. That's where the pizza and beer
what
is.
What beers exactly. are you making at this pizza and beer place?
Oh, you know, whatever I could make, they didn't have any temperature control. So, so I mean, our temperature control consisted of rolling the Grundy into the keg room, and that was basically how it all worked. But we did a couple Belgian ales, a couple Irish. Reds. The owner of the place was Brian Sullivan, a good Irish fella. So he was really big into the ales. And it was really loose, some golden ales, a couple IPAs. A new brewery had opened up down the street when I was building this place out called Diamond Knot Beer Company, which is a pretty widely recognized brewery in the Pacific Northwest having resuscitated hop double IPAs and things of that nature.
Yep.
So in some ways, this IPA is kind of a salute to the beers that they've been doing for over 20 years.
Were those the beers that, like, sort of started your palate going, or was it the beers that you tasted down in San Diego? I mean, where did you sort of cut your teeth with your palate?
Well, really, you know, in the Pacific Northwest in the early 90s, it was all about a couple of different things. It was about the wheat beers, Widmer Hefeweizen, Pyramid Hefeweizen, the American wheat beers with the lemon in them. Those were the big sellers. And then the IPAs were really starting to develop their hold, and the hops were getting big and prevalent. And but I wasn't really stunned by beer until I started working at Pyramid that had just merged with Thomas Kemper downtown Seattle, and I started working with those guys in it's like 93, 94, something like that. And I was just amazed by the craft lagers that Thomas Kemper was doing the Bohemian Dunkel, this dark, rich, chocolatey. Mm-hmm. The winter lager was this really nice, robust, chocolatey, but just clean and dry.
Finish really clean.
And just beautiful and subtle and very, very subtle. And that's what I try to do today. Most of my Kelso beers that I do, besides this double IPA that we've got in front of us, most of the beers that I try to do are Pilsner, our Nut Brown Lager, our Winter Lager, our Recessionators, a Doppelbach. They're all geared towards that style. That's really something that amazed me, is a craft lager is more than, you know, a Budweiser or a Stella or something like that, or Rainier. Rainier is a big Pacific Northwest.
Rainier
Olympia,
beer.
You know, Ole, that's the capital of Washington State, is Olympia. So it's also one of the most weird, really crappy tasting beers in the world.
Terrible beer.
Terrible beer.
Do you remember the old Red Hook Brewery in Fremont?
Oh, yeah.
Have you been there?
Yeah, the Trolleyman Pub. Yeah.
I used to live four blocks from there in grad school.
My uncle laid the floor at that place.
Are you kidding me?
I'm kidding.
Mid-90s, I'm going there, and I'm so poor because I'm in school. And
you go to the bar in high school.
I had taken that tour so many times because there was a free tasting at the end of the tour that they'd see me coming and they'd say, no.
You know, it's funny. What is that, 94, 95?
This is 92.
92, okay, because when Sonia, my wife, the other half of Kelso, when she moved out there from D.C., she's from New York, went to school in D.C., she moved out to Seattle for a little while. She was giving tours at that pub for about a year.
Wow.
But that was in 94.
94.
Which is, yes.
I had moved to New York. I was here.
You were here already.
Yeah.
So then she left that place because they wouldn't let – Washington State is very, very strict on its liquor control laws. And, for example, this is a pub, a brewery, and they have a no under 21 policy, as you would imagine. And they were making her kick families out that had infants with them.
What?
Yeah. It's Washington State. It's very like, nope, they're under 21. She's like, really? Really? this is a problem? No, there's no environment for babies. Shut, come on. You know, loosen up a little bit. But it's kind of how Washington State was. It's not like you're feeding a lot of beer to the child. Just a little bit so they sleep.
I have to say that I've tried your lagers, and they really do follow up where you were pointing at when you sort of cut your teeth. You know, you have some really flavorful beers that finish extremely clean. You know, it's just you.
Well, no, and, you know, and the first beers I had your Nut Brown Ale, but
that is a great
Nut Brown Lager.
Try to keep up. And chocolate lager too.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that is
chocolate
a great
lager,
beer.
Which I changed the name to the Winter Lager. The chocolate lager would go out, and people were like, oh, I don't know if I want a chocolate beer. We don't add chocolate to it. It's just chocolate malt, caramelized malt. It gives a bittersweet chocolate kind of flavor, but it's nice and clean. People would see chocolate in the name. They wouldn't order it. So the next year, for example, I did 60 kegs 1 year, and it was a little rough to sell it all. The next year, we sold that 60 kegs in 2 weeks.
Wow.
When I changed it to winter lager.
To winter lager.
Winter lager. You know, so it's the same beer.
Marketing.
Yeah, you know, it's just people just, chocolate sounds heavy, so they don't order as much, you know.
So, Kelly, you kind of started with a love of, like, lagers, recognition of good, well-made lagers.
Right.
How do you feel, because I, kind of being in the scene now for 5, 6, 7 years and seeing it, I feel like appreciation for those, what used to be maybe regarded as, like, base beers, like pilsners and lagers, is really kind of coming to the fore, and
sure.
lower ABV, you know, you see a lot of, like, 4%ers, 3%ers now, and kind of easy drinking, clean, like the art of that nuance, you know, I feel like has really come to the fore, and it's something that I love, and, you know, I've always loved. So I don't know, do you feel like it's,
definitely.
You feel happy about that?
Yeah, I feel definitely happy. I mean, don't get me wrong, light lagers have always been popular.
I mean,
but just
in
interesting structured
Light
lagers. I mean, Brooklyn Brewery's been doing lagers for years, and they've been on the forefront of that for, you know, a couple decades, really. But when you start getting into the brown lagers and the chocolate lagers and the winter lagers and even in the IPA world, you're starting, or in the ale world, you're starting to see sessionable beers and beers that are down 3.5 to 4.5%. Even was it Evil Twin does a 2.5% IPA?
Bikini beer. Yep. Bikini beer.
It's delicious.
Like that. Yeah. You know, that's kind of what I was referring to. That
so you're seeing a lot more like interesting, crafty, a full flavor spectrum.
Yeah.
Not just light gold.
Smoke pilsners and things like that.
Yeah. And they're
packing
a
ton of flavor into a low ABV beer. It's really.
Yeah.
It's
just taking the, and just being nuanced about it. And nuance is incredibly important in beer, I think, because that's where beer is headed. It's not a blow to the head. It's not the sours are great. The double IPAs are great. But that's going to always be, I think, a periphery. And you really need to focus on the core, which is sessionable and easy and something you can drink and have fun with.
All right. Hey, how do we sign off in Japanese? We're going to take a short break. What do you say in Japanese?
I guess you could just say, Jane.
Jane?
Yeah.
All right. Jane. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You are listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We're psyched to be in 2014. We've got a great show tonight. First, thanks to our sponsors, GreatBrewers.com. Thank you so much for supporting us and for supporting Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we got Kelly Taylor from Kelso, Jimmy Ludwig, the Happy Hour guys, and Ben Wiley from Glorietta Baldi and Bar Great Harry. So, Ben, you've been all over the place. I just learned that you and Kelly had both studied Japanese. I talked forever. I knew that you had been a pastry chef, and I said, "Wow, there's so many cool bar owners that went to cooking school or were chefs." But now you're saying that you need to study Japanese too.
Well, it helps, I guess. I mean, everything makes you a little more well-rounded. Just a lot of experiences, and going abroad is always fantastic.
Absolutely.
Actually, I didn't even study abroad much. I was studied for 3 months, but then I moved over there and lived over there.
I don't think anybody that goes abroad studies abroad, really.
Yeah. But you get so much, you just get very well-rounded, especially me. I don't think I had ever been out of New Jersey for more than about a week until I went to Japan. So that was
when you go overseas, it really changes your perspective on so many different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I was in Tokyo a couple of years ago, the craft beer scene there, they're a couple of years behind us, but they're exploding right now. You know, they're finding out, and they've had these sort of paradigms for centuries with craft sake, but now doing it with barley, it's a whole different thing, and it's really fun to see that.
Yeah, slightly ironic, because when I was there, the term, well, so right now in the Japanese language, the term for craft beer is you would say jibiru, J-I, Gbeaudu. Yeah. And that term didn't even exist when I was there. Like that, just, you know, of course the word Beaudu did, which means beer.
Yeah,
but that kind of construction for craft beer didn't even exist, because there was only Hitachino, was indeed around back then, but it was so kind of small and craft at that time. I didn't even know about it.
Well, we know that Mr. Kiyuchi yeah. Brewing was sake. They were sake mm-hmm, makers mm-hmm. for generations.
That's right. That's right.
And only in whatever, I think, the '80s did he start making beer. Mm, 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 mm. So, Kelly, are we still drinking
like
your?
I said that in Japanese.
Mm. Oh yeah. So
I'm going right back to it. He's completely back. He's in country. Look at this.
Kelly, are we still drinking your industrial IPA right there?
Hi.
Use the Japanese. Mr. Jimmy Ludwig, Michigan.
I want to talk a little bit.
Let's go back. Come on, we're going back.
I want to say that thehappyhourguys.com. Thank you. The Happy Hour Guys have gotten even cooler in 2014. You should swing by the website and check out what we're doing. There's some really cool stuff going on. We've started a documentary series. Really excited about that. And yes, I am from Michigan. A lot of my craft beer sort of upbringing started there, and I was just there for a bit. And Bell's Brewing, which is, they started in Michigan in 1984, I believe. Literally, Larry Bell stirring in a soup tureen on his kitchen stove. And now they're this juggernaut, and they're coming to New York, right? So Bell's.
So why is it such a big deal?
I just think that there are a lot of, I mean, if you talk to like Dave Ciancio, who is at, you know, Idle Hands Bar and a couple other places, he's from Michigan.
Oh, the Rev.
The Rev.
Yeah.
Yes. The Rev. Like the Dave Burger Conquest.
That sounds
man.
Familiar.
Yeah. Rev Ciancio. These guys, you know, for all of us, this is where we found craft beer. You know, you went into a bar and they were serving Oberon, you know, and you were like, what is, that's a strange name for a beer, you know, and. It's just sort of, it's everybody has their gateway beer, the craft beer that opened them up to everything else. And, mm-hmm. and Bell's, for people in the Midwest, Bell's was the beer that really sort of cracked it open for a lot of people. And they do some amazing seasonal releases. They do Hop Slam, which is kind of crazy. Everybody loves to try that. Some really wonderful, solid releases. And they're bringing the whole portfolio out here. And Laura Bell, who is Larry's daughter, who now is one of the VPs and heads up the marketing, told us about a year ago, I don't know if we're going to make it into New York. We'll make it to New York State. Well, somebody convinced them, and they're coming. So Bell's, I'm from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is way, way up north. And yes, not on the hand. When everybody says the hand, not on the hand. And Bell's actually just bought a tract of land up there and is going to start a satellite company called Upper Hand Brewing. And start brewing beer up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And you would think this would be a place that's like a craft beer desert. It isn't. I was just up there in a little town called Marquette, and there's a brewer there called Black Rocks, and they're making amazing beers. And they had a 3-year plan, and they went through it in like 6 months because the community just could not get enough of their beer. They can't make it fast enough. So we see, I mean, as the Happier Guys travel, we're all over the place, but we see this in every community all over the country, and you guys probably have other places that you know about where a brewer will just come to town and start brewing, and all of a sudden the whole community just wakes up and says, wait, this tastes amazing. I want more of this, please. More of this. And that's kind of what Bell's did for much of the Midwest.
We know the week of February 10th, Bell's is coming to New York. We're going to have an event, I think, on February 11th. At Jimmy's number 43. Are you guys going to get
Well, at all four of the bars, yeah. We have the entire portfolio covered across the bars. And I think it's maybe two or three at each bar. So, yeah, we went in heavy. I mean, when we started, Bell's was one of those kind of a mythical, you know, brewery to New York bar owners.
People ask about it all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, well, who cares about Bell's? There's so many other great breweries that we have.
For some reason, in New York anyway, 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was like Bell's and Yards, you know. Yeah. And if you had a friend who was going to Philly or something, PA, you know, you'd get him to bring back a Sixthole.
And if you're going to
Michigan.
I've
heard these stories.
Same thing.
You know, yeah. And so, I don't know. To see Bell's come in is as a bar owner, it's pretty interesting.
It's really fun. And it's, you know, they worked so hard in the Midwest to, you know, to put their product in bars that really, you know, to work hard to put a line in there, like a dedicated line that is a Bell's line, you know, and that's going to be where our beer is. And nobody was doing that back in the day. You know, they really kind of led the charge for a lot of people. And I think that's part of it. You know, mid-80s, that's pretty early to be on the craft beer wave. in, especially in the Midwest, where people are like, craft beer, what's that? You know, I don't know what that is. I got my other beer here. I don't know what that is. You know, so,
what are some other Michigan? We know Founders. I
absolutely.
Got a lot of Founders.
Founders.
What are some other Michigan breweries that people would know?
Great. Shorts Brewing is one of the sort of holy grail kind of. They do some crazy cool stuff. Shorts Brewing, Dark Horse Brewing, Atwater, which is in downtown Detroit, Arbor Brewing in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Founders is huge. Founders just gets bigger and bigger all the time.
Jimmy, did you bring some Michigan beer for us?
I did. I actually brought two cans.
Let's pour it out. Come on.
All right. I brought two cans of from Black Rocks, actually. They have a coconut brown that they've won a bunch of awards with, and they have a great IPA called 51K. Both these guys are cross-country skiers, and they do these 50K races.
Ben, which one should we try first?
What do you say we go with the 51K?
Here it is. Right.
Coconut right. sounds
good. And you have a friend on the phone right now, too. So
oh, excellent. Well, let's
talk us through it, Jimmy.
All right, so
it's Jimmy and Jimmy.
Hey, who guys, are you with us?
Hey, it's Eddie.
This is Andy Langlois, who is one of the owners of Black Rocks Brewery, and Dave Manson, are you there?
David's also here, but I just have my iPhone here, so the speakerphone's not so hot.
Gotcha.
So we were told to just do...
Andy...
So I'll answer a few questions, and then I'll pass it to David.
Right on. Andy, tell us a little bit about... You guys got started about, 3 years ago?
Yeah, we did. December 28th, 3 years ago, we started up and
in Marquette, Michigan, and you had a 3-year plan. How long did it take? I mean, you were kind of in a craft beer desert there in Marquette. How long did it take to sort of blow through that 3-year plan?
Well, you know, I don't know if we really had a plan other than to get things up and rolling. And you know, we started with a really small one barrel system, and God, we were just hoping that we would. You know, sell what we could and, you know, a handful of fermenters. And we did, like, the first night. So we ended up starting that progression towards growing into a, you know, eventually 10 one-barrel fermenters to a three-barrel. And, you know, 3 years later, now we're putting out cans and bomber bottles out of our 20-barrel system, 40-barrel fermenters. And it's things are rolling in the right direction. It's been a lot of fun.
Things are rolling big time. We're trying your 51K IPA right now, and I must say, what does the room think of the 51K? Are people liking this?
Yeah, it's very tasty.
It's nice.
Yeah, nice. Lots of hops.
Now, I'm told that there is... I'm not going to divulge your secret, Andy, but I know you told me there is a quote-unquote secret hop in this particular beer. You don't have to tell us the name, but
well,
you can tell us a little bit about
when
that.
When you're one of the little guys, you don't really get all the Gucci hops right off the bat, and we're not contracted out. And
Gucci
quite
makes
honestly,
hops?
You know, we grew at a rate that we were a little surpassed where we thought we'd be at this point. In fact, we're way farther than we thought we'd be at this point. So the fact that we came up with a solid IPA with a lot of research on our smaller systems and. You know, we found some good solid standby hops to go with.
So basically,
Palisade and then we actually we did do some more research on another hop, but I'm not going to even say what it is until we
don't you dare
it out.
Don't you dare! Don't you dare say that.
More of it.
But what I love is that you guys are, it's ingenuity. You didn't have, because of people contracting out for hops, you didn't have certain things available, so you sort of put your palate and your nose to work, and you created something that, I think this is a very solid, lovely IPA, and you put something together
guys,
that's really good.
Jimmy, let's talk to his other guy, the buddy.
Yeah, hand us over to Dave.
We can't hear everything on the phone line.
What's that?
Hand us over to Dave, will you?
Oh, sure, yeah, here's David.
All right.
And we know it's always great talking to you guys. We can't hear you as well as we wish we could.
Yeah.
But so we're just trying to get your voice.
Do you want to try a different line or do you just want to try
this
just keep going. We got,
hey, Dave, this is Dave Manson, who's the co-owner.
What we need, Jim, is we need more of their beer. You know?
Oh, we can do that.
We just went through that can. And
Dave, we're gonna pour the coconut brown. Tell us a little bit about the coconut brown.
Well, you know, I think when we had the ability to utilize the small brewing system and with the amount of beers that we had to produce just to keep our doors open, you know, we wanted to stretch and kind of do things that were a little different, a little more, you know, I mean, these aren't crazy avant-garde ideas, but just things that we said, hey, you know, we've got a barrel to play with. What would we want to do? And I can't even remember if it was our head brewer or Andy and I just mulling around, but you know, I've always been a fan of coconut, and I hadn't really seen a lot of it around in different beers. I know Maui has one in porter format. And we just kind of felt that that brown combination of that kind of that sweet maltiness mixed with that coconut might come through pretty well, and I'm proud to say it did. It kind of almost tastes like a Mounds bar when you're drinking it.
Yeah, we're tasting it here. I was just
thinking it tasted like a Mounds bar because oddly enough, I had a Mounds bar the other day. I never eat candy, and I had a Mounds bar the other day because somebody brought them to the brewery, and I just tasted it. I was like, wow, this tastes like a Mounds bar, which is quite interesting.
You could reduce that and kind of drizzle it over ice cream or something.
You absolutely could.
Oh yeah, or you should actually add it to like a roast and just kind of have it simmer inside of a piece of steak for a while.
Ooh, there you go. I gotta ask this question. In Marquette, Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula, what was the temperature this morning? How cold was it?
Well, this is our second what we call a cold day for the kids. They already canceled tomorrow. Our temperature this morning was, with wind chill, probably around 20 below.
That's not so bad.
No, there are a bunch of wimps. We used to walk both ways to school uphill with our shorts on in that weather.
So Michigan. So in Michigan, what are some beers that you were exposed to, you know, that helped inform you and you know, make you want to be a brewer?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the craft revolution hit here relatively early, I think, with Larry Bell and Bell's Brewery kind of getting things going. And, you know, I had what's now Oberon. I used to drink Sol Sun in college, and it was just kind of a unique, non-traditional beer. When even then, the options were limited. You know, if you were having Sam Adams, that was like the most amazing, crazy beer you could ever try in the Midwest. And so, you know, Bell's brought it through and kind of even passed some legislation to get brewers the ability to start and go, you know, get going. Obviously, Founders has been a great inspiration to us. Shorts has been a really big inspiration to us as both, you know, brewers as well as beer drinkers. They definitely push the envelope on a macro scale and create some very unique recipes, and you know, they're not all going to hit, but they're not afraid to try. So
that's great.
One thing I know that our buddy Greg Hall from formerly of Goose Island, he's gone into Michigan where he set up his Virtue Cider making area. What I know about Michigan, we want to try to summarize it.
Yeah,
I know that Michigan's really good with its agriculture. They promote, you know, there's a lot of fruit growers, so I know that's a good place to go if you want to make cider or something. Now, is Michigan really behind you know, these new smaller breweries as a state?
Absolutely. We've got an amazing Brewers Guild that is I would say a juggernaut of promotion for even when we were a one barrel brewery to, you know, as high as Founders. I mean, they're really advocating, you know, getting people to get out and try their local beers, whether they're in their own backyard or if they're just, you know, a small UP brewery like ourselves. So the state, any state has problems legislatively and dealing with, you know, alcohol and dealing with the state government. But by and large, they kind of kept a hands-off approach and let the industry flourish. Because it's not only just creating jobs for, you know, the on-site production and the pubs, but it's a real generation of people coming in from out of the state to tour through all the different breweries that Michigan has to offer. And I know they do that in Muskegon.
Yeah, they do it all over.
Wisconsin, but a lot in Colorado and,
yep.
And out west. So.
Absolutely.
Hey, Dave and Andy, guys, I'm just going to cut you guys off. Sorry, but it's Black Rocks Brewing.
Jimmy, Black Rocks Brewing.
Jimmy, thanks for bringing them on.
It's in Marquette, Michigan. Yep. Thanks so much for being with us, guys. We really appreciate it.
A lot of great stories out
there. Maybe we'll be at Jimmy's 43 someday.
Well, you maybe next week. All right. Well, cool. We got a great group here, Jimmy Ludwig. Thanks for talking about Michigan. There are a lot more stories that you have for us, Jimmy, I'm sure.
Oh, God. Okay.
And it's funny. He read from your script, man. He was like, I like Bell's Oberon.
But
did you give him a script?
They don't let him out of Michigan unless they can recite that.
Yeah, I did not. Honestly, I did not coach this man. But you think about it. I mean, Larry Bell started brewing in 1984, and there really wasn't anybody else in the entire, within six states, doing anything close to that at that time.
Let me give you my Bell's recap. Okay, so for years, and anytime I talk to certain people that like beer, they're like, oh, yeah, you've got, you know, Rush and River. That used to be what everyone asked for, and everyone wants, you know, heady topper. But then now the last few years, everyone's like, oh, do you guys have Bells? You have Bells. And I'm like, well, I don't really never had it, and I don't know where the phenomenon came from. But now that I talk to you guys, you're all brainwashed. It's like Bell's and Oberon. And then they're like, oh, Bell's is coming to New York in February. So, hey, Jimmy's number 43, Bar Great Harry, Mission Dolores. These are places to get Bell's. Starting the week of February 10th, so it's going to be awesome. Right, hey, we're taking a short break. We're all back from Christmas vacation, and we're all loopy as hell. But got a great crew in the session here. Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network.
Right on.
All right.
Woo!
You are listening to Kill Me in the Summertime by Dead Stars on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Life is what they say,
sun erases. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, you know, New York City Beer Week is coming up at the end of February. But before we get to that, one of my favorite happenings is the Homebrew Alley, which is sponsored by the New York City Homebrewers Guild. And it's in its fifth year, I think, and it went from having a handful of submissions to over 500. Jimmy's number 43 is one of the drop-off locations. No, it's crazy.
Over 500?
And, you know, what used to be New York City Homebrewers Guild was the only homebrew, and there was Malted Barley Appreciation, or whatever it was.
Yeah, Malted Barley Appreciation Society.
Wow. And now there's like, you know, close to 10 homebrew groups in New York City. But that's the brief intro is there's a great group also called Just Food at Just Food. And every year we donate to them a special package. And the package this year was Craft Beer Day. And Liz and Chris
Frank.
Thank you. Paid over $4,000 in the auction for Just Food to be here. So, you know, anyways, but it turns out he's a homebrewer too. So we're trying to, he's in the New York City Homebrewers Guild, so we're all buddies. Somewhat over words, but the Homebrew Alley is a very cool thing, and it's kind of like this core underpinning the craft beer scene is all these great homebrewers. And
absolutely.
Whether they're coming to, you know, some of your great bars in Brooklyn, or, you know, hanging out at Kelso, or, you know.
But my head brewer competes in Homebrew Alley.
Does he?
Which
one? Who's your head brewer now?
Pete Salmon.
Pete's a head brewer.
Yeah. And you've had him on the show before.
Yeah, Pete's awesome.
Yeah. He's a great home brewer, and I don't understand. I keep telling him, I was like, I think you should be disqualified.
How is that even possible?
But he brews it at home, you know.
Sounds like cheating.
Which I think he's got a problem.
I have to say this one thing, that the Happy Hour guys, we did we do a traditional looking back every year, looking back on the previous year where we've been. And this last year we did, we started a documentary series, and the first installation is called Beer Heroes. And all the, we sort of asked the same set of questions of everybody that we talked to in the last year. Who were your beer heroes? Who were the people that sort of got you into brewing? And home brewing is the continual, it's in every single conversation. Everybody says, well, and then I started home brewing. Or my buddy was home brewing. And when did Jimmy Carter sign that into law? That was in 1975?
79.
Yeah. That changed everything. That's when it tipped over, because people started brewing at home. They started brewing for their friends. And then they went, hey, maybe I can make a business out of this. Maybe I can make this work.
No, and check out, if you haven't read Tom Acatelli's Audacity of Hops, it's one of the first histories of American craft beer movement. It starts with the 70s and all that stuff. But we got Liz and Chris Frank. So you guys, welcome to the show. I want to thank you guys for supporting Just Food. It's a New York City homegrown, you know, food nonprofit. I know, Liz, you're part of a Just Food sponsored CSA.
That's right.
And we do every once in a while for some charity events. We donate. You get a chance to come sit on the show. So if you're out there listening, you can come on the show if you follow things like Just Food and Charity Buzz and some other things. But it turns out that, Chris, so you're a home brewer. And right now we're drinking one of your beers. So tell us about the beer you made.
Sure. I've been brewing for 2 years now. This is a local
Brooklyn hopped, wet Cascade Saison, French, 3711 yeast. So it's very smooth. There's not a lot of crazy Belgian flavoring. I have a friend in the 615 garden in Park Slope who is responsible for the Cascade Giant that's growing over there. And we
he's growing Cascade hops in Brooklyn.
That's amazing.
He actually found it.
There was a previous person at the garden who had been tending this Cascade bush. It's not a trellis or anything. They're not vines or anything. It's a massive bush. And I was lucky enough to I bought everything. He brought the hops, so it was amazingly for how smooth this is right now. It was a 3-pound. Wet hop edition, kind of dogfish style. Every 5-10 minutes, there was another ounce thrown in. 10-gallon brew, dry, DME mostly. It was mostly extract. It was not a.
It's a nice beer. Actually,
it's really very
it's
smooth.
A lovely beer.
Yes.
Thank you for
and
bringing it.
Thanks, you guys, for supporting Just Food at Just Food. Check them out on Twitter. They're really awesome. Thank you.
Thank you guys
for joining the conversation now. So Kelly, you're part of the scene leading to New York City Beer Week. You know, you started, your roots were, you know, your brewer in the West Coast, came to New York. I meant by saying you're the top brewer, but really where you work, yeah. I mean, you make a lot of beer for a craft brewer.
We do make a lot of beer.
We're a professional, you know,
we're doing about brewmaster. Overall, we're doing about 20,000 barrels out of there.
I call that a ridiculous amount of beer.
It's not actually. We should see how much Bell's does.
their new system or their new facility, if they top it out, it's 800,000 a year.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
That's a ridiculous amount. But we're doing a lot of beer in New York City. I mean, yeah. A lot of it is Kelso. A lot of it is Heartland Brewery. We're also doing Empire Brewing Company beer as well.
And you also sometimes make beers for other breweries.
We have in the past, though. We've kind of pared it down, and we're expanding the Kelso distribution footprint. So we've eliminated some of the contracts, let them kind of go their own way, and we started canning, doing the craft canning thing.
I didn't know about this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just about to ask
I brought
you.
The cans last time. You know, I'm looking at Jimmy. He knows about this old news for Jimmy.
Guess what? Jimmy.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody talks to me.
I just told one Jimmy. I figured you guys had a network or something.
You follow at Kelso Beer. At beer_sessions. We can do the at talk, but.
At what?
So what I learned was that
You're
you guys were the
me.
First. The first.
What is in this homebrew?
What is this?
I'm starting to see Jimmy's everywhere.
No, it's coconut, dude. Coconut fermented becomes crack. And my buddy, our buddy Chris Kuzme, last month he did this wild fermented kind of afternoon, and he made a coconut beer, which was pretty good. So your buddies in what is that place called?
Marquette, Michigan. Black Rocks Brewing.
Yeah. And Chris Kuzme and Eric are all using coconuts. But coconut, right. When you ferment it, becomes crack.
Evidently.
Kids. And that
should be on the label somewhere along the
about
line.
About homebrewing, how old do you have to be to homebrew? Do you have to be 21?
Oh, that's great.
No, that's why. That's how. Yeah. Incidentally, that's how I started brewing, was homebrewing.
You only have to be 18 to homebrew, right?
You don't even have to be 18 to homebrew.
You can
be
whatever.
You just can't drink it.
Right.
You know.
Supposedly.
That's why I started homebrewing. Was a friend of mine who said, hey, why don't we just go make beer this weekend instead of trying to buy it somewhere? I was like, what? we went down to the homebrew shop and had this really interesting adult, you know, conversation with this guy about making beer, which was it was really remarkable. And then we just buy the malts and the hops and go home and you know, ferment it out, and then, you know.
And you guys are like,
we couldn't drink it. You know,
we can
illegal.
Do this?
That would be illegal.
So we got to start a project, getting kids to make homebrew instead of, like, you know, whatever.
That sounds like a winning project.
I don't know about that.
We'll get Mad to sponsor it.
There's a lot of issues, and, we've got a new mayor. Mayor Bloomberg was great for 5 years. He helped us declare.
For 12
that.
Years.
He did, but he for 5 years, he declared that July was good beer month in New York City. So
it's only for in beer years, yeah, that's fine.
And I will say, under Mayor Bloomberg's rule, we saw Brooklyn breweries stay in Brooklyn and expand, and we've seen the growth of all these great new breweries in Brooklyn. So I would say, cheers to Mayor Bloomberg, did a great job.
Cheers.
Yeah. I will say that, and he really was a great mayor for everybody.
Mayor Mike.
But Kelly, you know, with Beer Week coming up, I mean, you guys are like, doing everything. I mean, you've got a great brewery, and yeah, Beer Week's coming up. So what's going on with Beer Week?
We've got a lot of great stuff. Well, the opening party is February 21st at Grand Central Terminal in Vanderbilt Hall.
Oh, wow.
Look for buy tickets now at nycbeerweek.com. Right. So we're going to basically have an 800-person beer festival in Grand Central. And not just a Grand Central, the Grand Central Terminal.
One of the coolest places in the planet.
Pretty much.
With great beer.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to be tearing that up on a Friday night.
So you're
going to
have all of the New York City breweries.
So we're going to have a lot of New York State breweries. We're going to have a lot of out-of-town breweries. Then there's 10 days worth of beer events. Brewer's Choice in the middle on February 26th will be a big part of that
because that's the granddaddy of them all. It's the fourth year.
Well, it's a big one.
Radio and Dave Broderick and Ray Dieter. Everybody was behind it.
Yeah, it's a big festival.
This year we'll be at the Wythe Hotel in Williamsburg.
And we're going to be using New York State ingredients at that festival. A lot of the breweries are going to be using ingredients from New York State.
We had a great collaboration. Kelly and I and June Russell from Grow NYC, we've been talking now for almost 4 or 5 months about bringing in some locally grown grains that are malted at Valley Malt.
Yeah, so there's craft malt houses now that take locally grown grain and malting them in small batches, malted. You know, so we're getting a hold of these grains, and Captain Lawrence is getting a hold of these grains. A lot of New York State Empire Brewing Company is getting a hold of them, and we're making beers with. We're releasing a beer for Beer Week with Edible Magazine. Which is made with 75% all New York State grain. Some grain grown by malt houses themselves.
You guys as Kelso or as the
Kelso? Yeah, Kelso. And then Empire Brewing Company is doing a lot of 100% New York State beers. So a lot of breweries are really getting onto that, and we're really promoting that for.
Wait, so
for
tell New us York about Brewing. This. This sounds so. Tell us about the edible.
Well, we're doing, you know, Edible Magazine is a national magazine that has a lot of local chapters, and it features. It promotes locally sustainable food and locally grown, locally sourced, that kind of thing. Not necessarily organic, because organic can be kind of overrated. And we're doing a beer with them every quarter that's just going to feature a certain local ingredient of some sort, whether it's a malted grain or raw grain or hops or fruit or whatever. We're going to be featuring that in the beer and then just talking about the full grain to glass of that.
So it's about local for Kelso this year. That's like your thing for
the year. Well, Kelso's thing in general is beer helps. and it helps get through radio shows that can be kind of confusing and disjointed.
This is the best radio show ever.
Yeah, which is a good thing. but it's also trying to give back to the community, which most microbreweries do. Yeah. Most microbreweries are very involved in the community. They do a lot of charity work.
Brewers make great neighbors.
They do, but you don't necessarily hear of that very often. So we're trying to promote Kelso's beer helps.
Brewers make great mayors.
Brewers do make great mayors.
And
in some cases, governors.
Yes.
In some cases, governors. Yeah.
Is that Hickenlooper? Who are you talking about? Hickenlooper?
Well, Hickenlooper. Well, yeah.
And his buddy from if a brewer is a governor. And brewery in Washington State.
50% of the time, if a brewer is a governor, marijuana is legal.
Ooh.
there's a lot of.
That's a whole different show.
I'm just throwing that down there.
That's a whole different show.
Well, it just kind of is an interesting statistic.
You know what?
I just pulled out of something.
Wipe it off first. That's wipe it off.
I like this.
But New York City Beer Week's coming up. Homebrew Alley's coming up. Give us a last plug for your new bar in Bed-Stuy, Ben.
Let's see. Gloria DeBaldi over at 502 Franklin Ave. This coming Saturday, January 11th, we have a charity drive for an organization called NOMI, N-O-M-I. You can see them on all social media. And that's a direct action network that helps women in developing third world nations. We'll be donating $1 for every pint of Narragansett lager we sell. And on the 14th, we have trivia with Bearded Ladies and Brooklyn Brewery. So that's what's coming up over there. And we have a whole lot of other events at the other bars, but maybe I should pass the mic around.
I'm still thinking about trivia with bearded ladies. That's sort of changing my life right now. I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
Well, you turn out the lights.
Stop. Oh,
no. So Liz and Chris, give us a quick shout out for just. Are you part of a CSA?
Hey, I want to let you know that the only reason I said it was okay for my husband to have a kegerator is because he said it would save us money.
And does it? Does it?
No.
Did it save you money?
Only on the seltzer bill.
And one more guy, Kelly. You brought this guy Jim. He's a industry guy.
Just you followed me.
Give us a shout out. What? Tell us your name and what you do.
My name's Jim McPhillan, and I am privileged to work with Kelso and Kelly Taylor, a true pioneer. So I'm very fortunate.
And what's your job?
And I go out there and sell. I promote. You know, I get as much information as I can from Kelly, him taking me under his wings.
And you kind of have a rock star voice, too. You sound like like you'd be singing in AC/DC or something.
Right. Once,
well, he was a machine gunner in the Marines.
Ah.
You know, so I was like, I like that. Just kind of just shoot, go. You know,
so, it does great, make for good beer, that's for sure.
It makes for good beer drinking. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's who I am, Jimmy. Wow. Thanks.
Yeah. Right on.
All right.
Yeah, cheers.
Okay, well, guys, I want to say thanks for coming on the show. It's the first show of 2014.
That's a good way to start off 2014.
Yeah, man, right? Well, cheers to everybody.
Great show.
And again, start thinking about New York City Beer Week.
Yeah.
You know, the kickoff at Vanderbilt Hall of Grand Central. That's pretty awesome. That's like an iconic New York event.
Yeah,
check that out.
And then, you know, the Brewer's Choice in the middle of the week is a great event. We're doing events at some old beer tunnels in Bushwick, Crown Heights, with a couple different groups, and we're doing all kinds of stuff. We're doing beer dinners, Applewood, and Blue Ribbon restaurants. And
yeah, no, it's gonna be nice. I know our buddy Chris Kuzmi at 5-8 Gasterbury wrote in and said there's cask a lot. He's doing a festival of New York City cask condition ales as well. So there's a lot of cool stuff, but I'm going to give one more plug. New York City Brewer's Choice. Check it out, nycbrewerschoice.com. We got behind it, Beer Sessions Radio, Dave Broderick, Blind Tiger. It's a real special event, and thanks for Kelly and Grow NYC for working on that.
Right.
And guys, everyone, thanks for coming in. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Brew Seal as well. And you can find us on Twitter at beer_sessions. And also, don't forget, our network is Heritage Radio Network. Check it out at heritage_network. Radio, whatever.
Coconut
wow.
beer.
We've been on for a few weeks. Happy New Year, everybody. So thanks to Jimmy, Kelly, Ben. We got Liz and Chris, Jim, everybody for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Maggie Seiden, and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer tonight, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Cheers.
All right.
Cheers. Cheers, everybody. Woo! Happy 2014.
Yo!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.